That was the year they murdered our president in Dallas. It was the end of innocence, the end of a certain way of thinking and being, and some were despondent and said it was the death of hope as well. But though falling autumn leaves may reveal skeletal branches, spring reclothes the wood. A beloved grandmother dies, but as compensation for the loss, her grandchild enters the world strong and curious. When one day ends, the next begins. For in this infinite universe, there is no final conclusion to anything, definitely not to hope. From the ashes of the old age, another age is born, and birth is hope. The year that followed the assassination would bring us the Beatles, new directions in modern art that would alter the way we viewed our environment, and the beginning of a refreshing distrust of government. If it also contained the germinating seeds of war, this should only serve to teach us that, like hope, terror and pain and despair are constant companions in this life, a lesson that is never without value. I came to the carnival in the 6th month of my 17th year, in the darkest hours of the night, on a Thursday in August, more than 3 months before that death in Dallas. During the following week, what happened to me would change my life as profoundly as assassination could transform the future of a nation, though upon my arrival, the shuttered and deserted Midway seemed an unlikely place for destiny to be waiting. At 4 o'clock in the morning, the county fairgrounds had been closed for almost 4 hours. The carnies had shut down the Ferris wheel, dive bomber, tilt-a-whirl, and other rides. They had closed up their hanky-panks, grab joints, pitch-and-dunks, pokerino parlors, had turned off the lights and killed the music, and folded up the gaudy glamour. With the departure of the Marks, the carnies had gone to their travel trailers, which were parked in a large meadow south of the Midway. Now the tattooed man, the midgets, dwarves, hustlers, the women from the girly shows, the pitchmen, the bottle pitch and ring toss operators, the man who made cotton candy for a living, the woman who dipped apples in caramel sauce, the bearded lady, the three-eyed man, and all the others were asleep, or fighting insomnia, or making love as if they were ordinary citizens, which, in this world, they were. A 3/4 moon, sliding down one side of the sky, was still high enough to shed a pale, wintry glow that seemed anachronistic in the hot, humid graveyard hours of an August night in Pennsylvania. As I strolled through the lot, getting a feel for the place, I noticed how strangely white my own hands looked in that frosty luminescence, like the hands of a dead man or ghost. That was when I first perceived the lurking presence of death among the rides and hanky-panks, and sensed dimly that the carnival would be the site of murder and much blood. Overhead, lines of plastic pennants hung limp in the muggy air. They were bright triangles when touched by sunshine or splashed in the dazzling glow of 10,000 carnival lights, but were bled of color now, so they seemed like scores of sleeping bats suspended above the sawdust-carpeted concourse. As I passed by the silent carousel, a frozen stampede was halted in mid-gallop. Black stallions, white mares, pintos, palominos, mustangs, charging forward without proceeding, as if the river of time had parted around them. Like a thin spray of metallic paint, traces of moonlight adhered to the brass poles that transfixed the horses, but in that eerie radiance, the brass was silver and cold. I had jumped the high fence that ringed the county fairgrounds, for the gates had been closed when I arrived. Now I felt vaguely guilty, a thief in search of booty, which was odd, for I was no thief, and harbored no criminal intentions toward anyone in the carnival. I was a murderer, wanted by the police in Oregon, but I felt no guilt about the blood I had spilled out there at the other end of the continent. I killed my Uncle Denton with an axe because I wasn't strong enough to finish him with my bare hands. Neither remorse nor guilt pursued me, for Uncle Denton had been one of them.